The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello everyone, this is I Should Be Writing, number 549. It's mid-December, or no, it's in the first third of December. I don't know what's happening. It's been one of those weeks where there were lots of migraines, and so the work I wanted to do on Tuesday wasn't done, and then Wednesday, and then today was do all the things on fire, and then I had agreed to do more World Builders charity streaming, which is why this episode is late. But I did get to play Among Us with a bunch of other authors, and I did pretty well. I murdered a lot of people, and I ran away a lot, so had fun. I got to run after Patrick Rothfuss while he was screaming no, 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 and then I killed him, so that was fun. Thank you, Tish. Hydrating's good. It's one of those, oh man, I did not choose the right color sweater today. I thought it would be more blue than green, and that would be okay. So, again, because the good thing about doing the podcast frequently is I have... I see you frequently. The bad part is I usually try to do an update to myself, and sometimes, especially if I've had a migraine and haven't been able to think or do much, the whole update about me and my writing, not really happening. I think my biggest thing today was all admin, where I was needing to change my agent information on my website and introduce my agent to my editors so that they can get all talky. So, well, welcome. First time, Tish. Thanks for dropping by. I hope we managed to entertain or at least entertain, maybe inform. I went to... Oh, you watched it in Trisby. Great. I hope it was fun to watch. Hey, Phoebe. Yeah, it's interesting how they don't tell you things like there are parts of the ship that actually do things that could benefit you. And those are not things that need to be fixed, usually. Nobody tells you that. And so I thought I was fixing the comms and just doing a bad job of it when I was just twirling the knob just to use the comms. So felt a little embarrassed there, but apparently... everybody else was either as experienced or less experienced than I was, so... especially since one person stood beside my murdered body with the murderer beside him, neither of them reported it, and I think she was just waiting for her timeout to happen before she could kill him. It was, and, you know, I was sitting over here biting my tongue going, someone report the body, please. No. If you don't know anything about Among Us, it's the new hot, cute murder betrayal game. Although it's not new. It's one of those strange things that came out 2.5 years ago. And I think because of the pandemic, it hit big this year. It hit so big that they decided to stop working on Among Us 2 and just keep making Among Us better. Not really sure I follow that logic, but I'm not a game developer. So, said hello to Phoebe. Phoebe, in the chat on Monday, we were talking about Blazeball and discussing the possibility of, like, getting all the Blazeball author fans together to do something, like, fanfic or charity-wise, but I realized that most of us have too much going on to actually add that to our to-do list. But it sounds fun. I mean, being an anthology about Blazeball with Arcady Martin and Amal would be pretty cool. But, yeah, I don't want to be the one to helm that. I just did Escape Pod. I'm good with anthologies for now. Hey, Billy Boy, good morning. And, see, yeah, I guess Real Gamer Cow, first, hello and welcome. Among Us equals Digital Werewolf or Mafia. I know that's the concept of it, but for some reason, Werewolf and Mafia, those kinds of games, I don't like them. I don't like Secret Betrayer games, which is why I resisted Among Us for so long. But, it was actually, for some reason, it doesn't stress me out like Werewolf and the other ones do, Mafia. I think there was an epic thing on oh, Phoebe, I just got your DM. Yes, more about Blazeball. I think this might have been the year they stopped doing it. I went to Viable Paradise back in 2006. Yeah, long time ago. And playing those kinds of manipulation betrayal games were pretty standard at the time. And it got Therese Nielsen Hayden is one of the best murderers, because she's very good at acting, very good at poker face, and she got angry because everyone assumes it's her because she's so good at it, and she got very angry and yelled at us and made us all feel really bad. You can probably guess where this is going. But I think people got a little too emotional about it, and I don't know if they still play, but it was pretty, yeah. But yeah, I like Among Us. It's cute. Everybody runs around the ship trying to fix it. The imposter runs around trying to kill people and sabotage the ship. So, and the killing animations are really funny. They sometimes I want to be killed just so I can see another fun kill animation. Because you don't get to see anybody else's kill animation. Hey, Tim, good to see you again. I like Among Us because additional gameplay elements, the chores are pretty fun and relaxing for the most part. Yes, if you don't think someone's going to come up and kill you, the little puzzles are kind of fun. Forum games of Mafia were pretty popular after that. The chores give you something to concentrate on, concrete to go on, rather than, I'm not guilty, I swear. So, I'm doing some planning for the new year, and I'm pretty happy with the planning I'm doing, but, oh, hey, Hossarian. But the planning has been kind of for the new year, and I'm like, well, I still need to podcast this month. So I went into the podcast suggestion area of Discord, and y'all have been talking up a storm about derivative works, and when people say your stuff is derivative during workshops. And I thought that was awesome to talk about, because it is a very weird, it's a weird thing. I know this is my go-to metaphor. If you haven't heard it, yay. If you have heard it, I'm sorry. But, you know, the concept of woman, young woman who's got some mystical talent, who an old vampire falls in love with and or becomes obsessed with, and she proves to be very powerful. That is the plot of at least four stories. Four very popular stories. maybe Sunshine by Robin McKinley wasn't as popular, but it still uses the same thing. Young woman, interesting power, older vampire. So, people get uptight about ideas. And in part, I think people don't want to, sorry, I'm trying to figure out where to start this thought. You can't copyright an idea. That doesn't stop people from going, taking people to court and saying that a copying an idea is closer to plagiarism. So that's when it goes to court, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But when you write fanfic, it's most authors that I know do not mind fanfic, but they say, do not send it to me. And that's not them being rude. That's them saying, let's say I come up with a plot for Six Wakes and you write fanfic and just happen to come up with the same general plot and you send me your fanfic. Well, when my take, my similar story comes out, that might open me up to you saying that I stole your idea. And that's why authors say don't do that. But honestly, yes, Harlan Ellison was all about... Harlan Ellison, you know, I don't understand how he spent his fortune and his last years reveling in litigation and not, like, writing. I mean, okay, you don't have to write your whole life. When my husband and I talk to our financial advisors, you know, they talk about, when do you want to retire? I'm like, retire? Is that something writers do? I guess they could. I mean, you know, if I want to move from this job into the litigation job, that, you know, how many fans can I sue? That sounds great. But the thing is that you could stand in front of a creative writing room and you could give them a story prompt and you would get, however many people there are, you would get that many different stories, because the things that come through your head are shaped by your experiences and the stories you want to tell, and that is unique. The story idea is not unique, but what you put into it, that's where the unique part comes. And it's kind of sad because people were mentioning in the Discord that the workshop had told them stuff was derivative. And we're like, we're still copying Shakespeare. And we're still copying fairy tales. People love retellings of fairy tales. They love it. And, you know, it's Star Wars was heavily derivative of Hidden Fortress. One of the, is that a Kurosawa movie? I can't remember. But, you know, it wasn't space battles, but there were a lot of actual shots of the movie taken from the Hidden Fortress that were used in Star Wars. And Shakespeare was a copycat, yes. So, yeah, you can copy. It happens. Plagiarism happens. And it sucks. It's terrible. But, you know, when someone says your work is derivative, that's one of those things where you just think, I think you're looking for something to complain about. Because it's possible your work is too much like, has too many elements that are similar to a sort of overall known pop fiction idea. The description, the example in the chat was vampires and werewolves hating each other. But, you know, someone was saying, oh, well, you took that from Twilight. But then there's also Vampire the Masquerade. And there's also, I think Nobilis posted a Wolfman versus Dracula in Technicolor movie poster. So, you know, anybody who says you copied something from somebody, it's possible that somebody copied it from somebody else. Everything after the Iliad and the Odyssey is fanfic. Yes, that's a good point, Todd. Good to see you, and hello, who'd I miss? I miss Frigg's daughter and J. Cause Wrights. Good to see you guys. The act of doing of stories is often taking something familiar and putting your own spin on it. I mean, we've talked about the fact that people say they want new stories, but they don't. They want a certain amount of comfortable expectation with stories. That's why romance writers get really angry when you don't give them a happily ever after or a happy for now ending. This is why mystery writers, you know, mystery readers get pissed when you don't solve the mystery or your hero doesn't solve the mystery. This is something that I discovered that I didn't know like was a thing, but it's like I was reading some mystery advice and one of the things was it's very important that your hero solves the mystery, doesn't like someone else solves it and tells the hero or something. Which as it is sounds like pretty lazy storytelling anyway, but it was not something I'd thought of as a concrete rule. But and you know, sometimes people do put the conflict in the middle or the climax in the beginning and then tell you the story after that. But those are largely experimental. And it's like I think it was the original Save the Cat book that talked about the winning formula for the story beats and how people say it's too rigid. And, you know, what about Memento? And he's like, well, what I'm talking about is actual box office sales. Memento was, you know, innovative and different. And people loved that about it, but didn't make a lot of money. And so the point of Saving the Cat was to write screenplays that made money. I know, authors making money, it's absolutely terrible. Terrible to be able to eat. So, when Phoebe's going backwards, the Iliad and the Odyssey were fanfic versions of earlier oral versions that were never written down. Yeah, I know, Phoebe, calm down. We are allowed to eat. My monocle would pop off if I was wearing one. There's a lot of derivative stuff out there, and we love it. We love derivative stuff. How many freaking Star Treks are there? That is all derivative. It's all derivative of the first one. And we love it. We eat that up. So it's, you know, it's okay, it's a different ship. It's a different crew. But, you know, listen, if things are too close, and this is one of those things that you can't really measure. You can't say, oh, well, I hit three story details that were too close to Sookie Stackhouse. I should probably change those. You gotta get a feel for it. Stars Trek. Oh, is Stars Trek the plural of that? I'm sorry. The discussion of how to pluralize Star Trek is going on in the chat. So, one thing that gets me is, and I'm going to be covering language. I started talking about language last week, but I'm going to be covering it more in January. But there's, like, derivative works, and there's tropes, and there's cliches. And those words are sometimes used academically to just describe what the things are. And sometimes they're used as weapons. If you don't like a certain trope, a lot of people call it a cliche. Is it a cliche? Possibly. But sometimes it's, you know, the detective who solves everybody else's problems but can't get their own life in order. That's pretty standard. Everybody likes some familiar elements in their stories, says Tim. Cliches are more problematic on the micro level. Yeah, sometimes cliches also embody a lot of negative stereotypes of marginalized folks. And because it's lazy writing, not actually doing any research or talking to anybody from that group is where those kinds of cliches come from. What's funny is I never thought about my book, Shambling Guide to New York City. It's a book about a travel guide for monsters. If you're a monster and you want to go to New York City, what kind of travel book would you buy? What would you need to know? And, I wrote about the first human to get a job writing for that company, and I had a lot of fun doing it, and it wasn't until right before it came out that I realized how incredibly affected by Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy I'd been. I was obsessed with that book when I was a teenager. Oh, hey, T, good to see you. T. Morris, been podcasting as long as I have. We are old, we shake our canes at the crowd, at the clouds. And he also wrote Twitch for Dummies and Podcasting for Dummies. So say hey to T. And we are good at that. Yes, we are very good at shaking the canes. Oh, hell, where was I going? Sorry. Wanted to say hi to T. Yeah, lost it. If anybody wants to remind me or rewind or something. Phoebe says, regarding sentence-level cliches, so many of those have ableist hurtful things baked into them that they can pass beneath notice for many people because they're so normalized. Yes, that is very true. And it's something that will take a great deal of effort to get recognized and changed. Yes, thank you, Douglas Adams. Yes, yes, our generation was profoundly affected by Douglas Adams, but I could not believe that I didn't go in wanting to write a book like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But I did. It was not a conscious thought at all. Which, if you knew me as a teenager, you might think I'm lying because I was obsessed with that book and the radio dramas. Listened to those on bootleg tapes in my car. Forever. I'm still mad the Lentilla story never made it to any of the other tellings of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because the Lentilla story was very funny. Yeah, I read the heck out of that book. Douglas Adams and Gary Larson, interesting. In watching the Fish Called Wanda as an adult, for one, I couldn't believe my mother let me watch it as a teenager, but also I realized that shaped an awful lot of my humor, a whole lot. I was not, it took a while for me to get aware of Monty Python. I grew up in a very small town, and I think it was on PBS in the middle of the night. So, it took me a while to get aware of that, but A Fish Called Wanda was the first exposure I had to the brilliance of Cleese and Palin and Jamie Lee Curtis. She was amazing in that. But yeah, I did not realize how, like my husband looked at me, he's like, I understand so much more about you now. Oops. Hey, Truck Poetry. Good to see you. Now what? Cap, man, I wap. Sorry. Every time I mess with the bots, they grab something else that's completely inconsequential. Sorry about that, Tish. Lots and lots of annoyance there. But anyway, you do need to think about what language you use and what story elements you use. But if anybody calls your stuff derivative and don't back it up with a lot, or as the description, as the example in chat was, like a girl flying with goggles was too close to the Rocketeer, it's like, that's like having a car with a windshield is too much like Christine. I mean, of course you would have goggles if you flew by yourself. They're bugs and wind and stuff. Yeah, so it's, you go through and you look at your, what they tagged, and think, it's your call. You're the writer. This is something I think beginning writers need to hear more often. Ultimately, it's still your call. Will that leave your story worse off? Possibly. But it's still your call. If people say something's derivative and you like it, it's only their opinion. And I always know that I'm dealing with a good editor when they say, here's my suggestions, but they're only suggestions. Because they don't want me to write a book that's not mine. They're not trying to make it their book, they're just trying to make it what they think is better. Plot with rising action, climax, and denouement seems derivative of every other plot I've read. Yes, yes, Cameron, that's right. We talked about that earlier, how some people have tried to mess with that formula, and it's been innovative and interesting, but you wouldn't call it popular and lucrative. Phoebe says, I sent a terrified email to my agent when I heard about the Big Girls comic series because I was worried that everyone would see my giant queer lady novel as derivative. I think it got canceled, but oh, hell, now I can't remember what it was. But there was a TV show a couple of years ago that starts with six people wake up on a spaceship and they don't know who they are, and it gets violent immediately. I nearly lost it because Six Wakes was still a couple of months out from being being published. I was so worried. And I don't think anybody's made the connection, especially because the show's not around anymore. Yes, Dark Matter. Thank you, T. But it's like the opening, aside from floating gore, the opening is exactly like my book. Exactly. And it scared me so much. So it's, Phoebe, what did your agent say? I hope they, helped out a little bit. Ugh, words, hard. T says, sometimes people look at properties like sacred cows when they're actually tropes. Just write the story you want and then refine it in the following drafts. Yeah, that's true. The problem with a lot of literary fiction, they want the plot to be original, but they hurt the story in doing so. Oh, that reminds me. Yes, she told you not to worry at all. Exactly. So this is a little embarrassing to talk about in public, but it amused me so much and I figure I'd do it. I was talking to a friend of mine and she told me she was about to go see a certain lady doctor the next day. And I'm like, yeah, I got my checkup too. And she's like, we're like the sisters of the open legs. And I thought, sisterhood of the open legs. It'll be a huge bestseller. And then I started thinking about what talk show I'm going to be on to talk about this. I don't know what the plot would be, but I'm going to write it and I'm going to be on Ellen. And then I heard Ellen wasn't so great these days, but I didn't look up why. But then my mom said Don Lemon. And then my gynecologist really liked the idea, although she suggested the Sisterhood of the Missing Pants. But then I realized I'd never read Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. So I was asking some friends of mine about it, and I'm like, so is it heartwarming with a recovery from a terrible assault and or someone dies? And then I read the plot, and it's like, yep, there's some cancer, and there's an encounter that apparently parents thought was an assault, but the teens involved did not. Okay, so yeah, that's my heartwarming thing. That's the, it's like you say heartwarming, I'm pretty sure that someone's dying of cancer or the dog's gonna die. And possibly someone gets sexually assaulted and then recovers because... Ugh. Sorry. But yeah, Sister of the Open Legs, wouldn't that be more of a Springer or a Mari? No, I mean, somebody was telling me I could make it very sex positive and anti-slut shaming too. So... You know, it could be positive. But anyway, I know that went way off. And I didn't swear, so it's still okay for they might... I should be writing. But They Might Be Giants mug in front of me. That's where that came from. But yeah, that was my literary trope that you guys mentioned that reminded me of that because the heartwarming thing. And then I told my ex-agent about it. And she's like, ah, heartwarming cancer. I'm like... Didn't John Green make a fortune off of heartwarming cancer? That's just... And you know, I haven't had it, but I know a lot of people who have, and I just can't... I kind of want to ask them, was it heartwarming? Was your cancer experience heartwarming? Because, yeah. But those books keep selling, so is that a trope or is it a cliche? Who can say? I think if you don't like it, it's a cliche. Granted, sometimes cliches are cliches and terrible and need to be fixed, but sometimes it's just people who don't like tropes. I was watching The Mandalorian, rewatching because my daughter hadn't seen it, so we've been rewatching season one, and I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, he is good at everything. Except for maybe interpersonal relationships, but he is good at everything. Isn't that a Mary Sue character? But we can't call him that because everybody loves him. But he is so much, like, even if he doesn't do anything perfectly, he still does it well. I mean, he flew a spaceship with holes in it. So yeah, that's my thing. It's like you can't call the Mandalorian a Mary Sue because everybody likes the character. But he does everything perfectly. Not perfectly. Well. Very well. So, yeah. That wouldn't bother me if people hadn't yelled about Rey being a Mary Sue, even though she grew up by herself and was a scavenger. So, yeah. She had those skills. I love magical artifact shows, even if it's the same concept over and over again. I do too. Man, I love me some magical MacGuffins. The Book of Swords, when I was growing up, I was obsessed with that. That was the first fanfic I ever wrote. Before I knew what the word fanfic was more Books of Swords stories because Fred Saberhagen stopped writing them. And, I loved The Lost Room, even though it had one of those... male and female character with no chemistry at all have to have sex somewhere around the middle. I mean, I'm all for romance. I was watching that and I'm thinking they don't have any chemistry. How is this a love thing? They're gonna have sex for absolutely no reason. Yeah. Okay. But, there've been a billion Cops of the Real Heroes shows and they're still being made hand over fist. Yes, they are. What do you call a Mel Mary Sue the hero? Thank you, Kay Kimmy. And welcome. Good to see you again. Hey, Wordathon. Often I think male characters are allowed to be hyper-competent with poor interpersonal skills and be awesome. Female characters get judged more harshly for the same traits. This is not your opinion. This is fact. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Lost Room was just really interesting. I don't even remember the concept. I just remember it was a mini-series where... there was a hotel room where something happened. Probably a murder. I don't know. But then everything in that room became like magically charged and then flung out around, and each thing had a weird ability. Like, the comb allowed you to either teleport or move like 6 seconds in time, or the pen. And then one of them, if you hit somebody with the bus ticket, they fell out of the sky in Kansas or somewhere in the Midwest and just landed. It's a very strange show, but it became essentially the guy's kid wandered into the lost room, and then the door closed, and then every time you open the room, it resets. So where did the kid go? So I really don't remember what happened or why the room was like that, but I just remember loving the hunt for all the magical stuff. So I feel bad when I did the extra life rut thing, which I'm still doing, just not really pushing it during I Should Be Writing. I promised if I hit a certain level, I would set up dog cam. Thing is, the dogs haven't wanted to hang out in here. So I have dog cam, but there's no dog. See? That is where the dogs would sleep if they were in here. And you can see they haven't been in here in a little while because the carpet got all bunched up. Maybe if I smoothed the carpet out, it would be better. But anyway, dog cam is ready. I just need the dogs. But, where is the thing I was looking for? I watched Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas on the watch party yesterday, which was interesting because it's been a very long time since I'd seen it. But I had Grant Pachoco, longtime podcaster and puppeteer, on with me to talk about it. And we talked about the history of the Emmett Otter special and how certain people hold it as one of the best holiday specials ever and certain people have never heard of it. If I bring food, the dogs will follow. Yeah, Bill, but you know, I don't really want the sound of my dogs eating to be on the mic. So there's that. I think I saw the Emmett Otter outtakes a while ago. I just haven't seen them recently. I did hear that it starts to get a little PG-13 with the language because they're waiting for something to happen with something rolling by and it just doesn't, and they get really frustrated. But what was really interesting was Grant was telling me, like, we're seeing these characters stand around and be pleasant and singing together. And he's like, yeah, there are six people right under them that are really, really mashed together. And one of the first rules of puppetry is, you know, always have good deodorant. And, you know, watching the scene in the talent show. And he's like, yeah, there are 30 puppeteers underneath that audience. And you don't think about the audience when you're not a puppeteer because it's just people sitting in the audience, but they're not people, they're puppets, and they're moving as people do. You know, you don't just sit entirely still. And yeah, they put a lot of work into that. It was pretty amazing. But my watch parties aren't doing a whole lot, so I'm thinking of winding them down. But I do have one planned for next week, Santa Claus versus the Martians. Which also my bingo card will not help, but it's still, my bingo card is still fun. If you watch Christmas rom-coms, I welcome you to go check out my bingo card because it is a lot of fun. We've watched a couple of, rom-coms this season and used the bingo card. No one's won yet, which is sad, but the bingo card is a fun way to suffer through some of the movies that are not unforgivable, but sometimes you wonder why you're watching it. Just because it's Christmas tree doesn't mean you're heartwarmed, or Christmas tree and lack of cancer and still no heartwarming. I don't know. But anyway, is there anything you guys want to ask me? It is about that time. I'm here for questions. I figure I will be, let's see, next week is the 15th and 17th, so I'll be streaming next week. Not sure about the week of Christmas. And I won't be streaming the last week of the year, because I'm going on a... probably, unless the county gets shut down, I'll be doing a another retreat, not retreat, but a vacation in another house kind of thing. Not mixing with lots of people, just trying to get a different view of things, so won't be streaming then. I sometimes think about the people who do like long time holiday streams. T, if you're still around, I'd like your take on it, because my family does not stream. So I love the idea of like doing, like Alan Marguerite did a big long Halloween stream, and I know people do like New Year's Eve streams, but when it's like a special day like that, I'm thinking maybe not, maybe I'd rather spend time with my family, but sometimes I wish I could do a special stream like that. So, but you know, family comes first, so. Oh, good. I'm sorry you missed the watch parties in Trisby. I think next week we're going to be moving the time. Good to see you, Phoebe. Thanks for dropping by. It's always good to see you. But yeah, I think to fit both Alan Marguerite's schedule and my schedule, it's going to be... crap, I can't remember. It's going to be shifted back, but I will make an announcement. So if you want to get Santa Claus and the Martians, then we can do that. I enjoyed it. Definitely be back for Catch Your Parties. Oh, thank you, Tish. That's great. Thank you. Cameron says, ties into your goals and marketing podcast the other day that I just listened to on my walk up earlier. Are you advertising your watch parties aside from the cast, like on Twitter or something else? And also, synchronous may just be more difficult than asynchronous for people. Hence, I listen to every episode of I Should Be Writing, but can only make the Twitch stream 10% of the time. 10? Really? I feel like I see you more often than that. Anyway, that's not your point. But I am advertising them more on Twitter, and I did a blog post about it. I'm trying to remember to get more into advertising, but it's just... it's hard to add another thing to the list. But I did do a lot of advertising for this week's streams, because I've been doing like the watch parties and World Builder streams for charity and these. So I was trying to get the word out for those more often. So I had not been a lot, but I will be starting more. The problem with the watch parties is Amazon has not really gotten it very smooth yet. It's clunky. It's awkward. Grant was the first person I had on where I had him on voice and video, and we had some buffering problems. And you can't, you know, once you hit play, it's like you're on Amazon time, not your time. So it still has some things to be desired. So, you know, not having the best product to give people is also not entirely ideal. But I did do a survey for Patreon people to see if they wanted to, if they would want me to change times of my streams, what time would be better. And a lot of people said, a lot of people like 12:30 where it was, but the most popular choice was 3 p.m. Eastern time. So I'm thinking about at least moving one of my streams to that time. So I have been listening. So yeah. If anybody else has any questions, I'll be delighted to answer them. Oh man, on Tuesday I was so good about taking notes for the show notes, and I did not this time. Let's see. Oh well, I will work on that. I'll wait for a second. Has to be Amazon, right? Can't use Netflix. No, it's Amazon owns Twitch. So Amazon has allowed you to use, if you have Amazon Prime, you can stream Amazon Prime movies, but only the ones that are free. Like, I can't buy an episode of The Office and play it on a watch party, which I would do with Matt on Ditch Diggers, because we love talking about The Office and its various storytelling abilities. But, yeah, Netflix would be better because I like the things to talk about with the stuff available on Netflix just writes itself, especially with all of the princess movies and all of the fake European country movies. So yeah, I'd love to do Netflix, but copyright laws would just shut me down immediately. Has to be free on Amazon Prime, which also limits it regionally. I had a audience member from Finland drop in and be like, I can't see anything. I'm like, yeah, sorry, you're in Finland. It's Amazon's rules. Sorry. Yeah, it sucks, but I'm at Amazon's mercy. It's nice that we have the ability to do it in the first place, but it still would be better it needs to be smoother. And I hope people are working on it. It's pretty new, I think. 12:30 is the stream time. Works well for me as I can listen during lunch. Yeah, thanks, Todd. 12:30 was a popular choice. It was, so I definitely going to keep some at 12:30. I'm just trying to figure out other times to, stream. Oh, hey, Devo Spice. I realize I didn't say hey to you earlier. I'm sorry. Giving me an idea for a live MST3K type thing with Twitch Amazon content. Thanks, Murr. One more project I don't have time for. Well, see, that was what I was trying to do with these Christmas rom-coms. I was trying to do it MST3K style with the bingo cards and everything, but I don't think I'm promoting them well enough or selling it well enough. I don't know if I can use the MST3K description. But yeah, that was my intent, is to watch Christmas rom-coms, laugh at them, and raise money for charity. But, still limping along. I may try it more. I don't know. I've been... Does notification go out on Twitch when you do them? You know, I don't know. That is a really good question, because they're very clear that if you're only a Twitch viewer, there's two levels of Twitch to try to gain when you're a streamer, which is affiliate level, which means you have to have a certain amount of time streamed in a month and a certain amount of followers, or a certain amount of viewers, average viewers. And then above that is partner. Affiliate's pretty easy to get. Maybe I'm just taking for granted, but having a podcast following made affiliate no problem. Partner's a lot harder. And you know, I know people who've been streaming for years and years and have a very dedicated following but still haven't made partner. But the but they're very clear that streaming the watch parties do not count towards any sort of partner goals. And I'm wondering if they have that real. If they have that set up, then maybe they don't send notifications? But that seems weird. I don't know. Yeah, it's a... Oh, and also another problem with the watch parties is you can't watch it on mobile, which is baffling. But yeah, people have said they can't watch it on mobile, so that's another problem. My daughter's a partner now with Twitch. Awesome. But she's a gamer. What's funny is because I'm a podcaster, that is where my audience is, and my gaming is not, also not really moving any, I get, the podcasts are a lot more popular than my games. Granted, I have been streaming a Japanese pigeon dating murder mystery from 2011, which I know is not like Fortnite, but yeah. That also makes sense why they wouldn't push to mobile devices if we can't watch them there. I guess, yeah. But I mean, I don't know, does anybody get Twitch notifications on their desktop if they're, like, working? Does Twitch have to be open? Because all of my notifications come to my phone and my watch. I don't know. Anyway, the watch parties are fun, but they're limited, and it's frustrating. But I'm still trying to work with it because it is fun sometimes. And you know, it's fun to watch something with a friend. I forgot how much fun that is. Thank you, COVID. So, that's why they're called watch parties. Like, you don't have to be, you know, perform. You don't have to perform. You can just try to watch with some friends and have some fun. But I think that is it for me, and I should be writing. Thank you all for checking in. I did not thank you earlier, but thanks to Real Gamer Cow for the follow. And appreciate everybody dropping by and chatting. Devo Spice, if you want to talk to me about that watch party stuff, happy to give you my limited knowledge. But yeah, if you want to be alerted, you can follow and sign up for notifications. If you want to support the podcast, you can subscribe via Twitch or you can subscribe via Patreon. Twitch gives you emotes and ad-free streaming, I believe, and Patreon gives you archive access and early podcasts, although the live podcast is the earliest, but you know, then Patreon people get it and then it goes out on the feed. And yeah, you can, right now I'm doing a special offer on Patreon that everybody who subscribes at the $3 level, or even if you're at the like $1 or $2 level and you change to $3 level, I'm doing a special offer to send postcards and holiday cards and birthday cards and stuff to people. So I have my official I Should Be Writing postcard with Santa Claus on it, writing his memoirs, that I commissioned from Len Peralta, and I'm very happy with that art. So, yeah, would love to send that out to you. So that's patreon.com/mightymer. And Twitter is Mighty Mer. Instagram is Mighty Mer 2. I'm trying to remember to post to Instagram more. And yeah, my next stream, I believe, is tonight when I'm doing a game. Do I know what game? Oh, I think I was going to do the Hatful Boyfriend holiday thing, the DLC, because I have no idea what happens there. But at the very least, you could tell a friend that you like I Should Be Writing and where they can find it. That would be a huge help to me. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymer. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Emilio. You can find more about him at johnemilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. But I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today.
Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast FREE.